"You are old, Father William," the young man cried. The few locks that are left you are grey. "You are hale, Father William, a hearty old man. Now tell me the reason, I pray." "In the days of my youth," Father William replied, "I remember that youth would fly fast, and abuse not my health and my vigour at first, that I never might need them at last." "You are old, Father William," the young man cried, and pleasures with youth pass away, and yet you lament not the days that are gone. Now tell me the reason, I pray." "In the days of my youth," Father William replied, "I remembered that youth could not last. I thought of the future, whatever I did, that I never might grieve for the past." "You are old, Father William," the young man cried, "and life must be hastening away. You are cheerful and love to converse upon death. Now tell me the reason, I pray." "I am cheerful, young man," Father William replied. "Let the cause thy attention engage. In the days of my youth, I remembered my God, and he's not forgotten my age." That poem, unhappily, not my own, you will notice, is a parody. A parody usually takes something which is good and turns it into something humorous. This has gone the other way around. It's a parody of Lewis Carroll, of course. And the young man who rather contemptuously referred to Father William standing upon his head. "Do you think at your age that is right?" But you know, David would have echoed those words. He'd have found the rhythm a bit strange. I'm quite sure about that. But the sentiment, "O God, who hast taught me from my youth, and hitherto I have declared thy wondrous works. Now also when I am old and grey-headed, O God, forsake me not until I have showed thy strength unto this generation and thy power to everyone that is to come." Could I ask you to turn to one of the favourite psalms, Psalm 103. Now, we've heard a lot this weekend, haven't we, about true values. And you know, people often talk about youth in a way that makes it perfectly plain that they are envious of them. You know, some of the criticism of young people that goes on because, well, we haven't got the same vigour, the same health, the same prospects as the younger people. Sometimes, unhappily, the criticism goes on because the advantages were never my generation that you have and you enjoy. And there's a great tendency to classify young people all the same. And I'm happy to say, and I know Brother Harry will agree with me, that Swanwick is the place where the testimony is made that young people are not like them, that people contemptuously dismiss. On the contrary, that young people are seeking something, and when they know what it is, they seek and find it. Then indeed, the future of our community is assured. But still, the fact remains and has got to be faced. You can't run quite so fast. You know, you puff a little bit when you go for the bus. And we never had that game of ping pong, did we?
No.
Never mind. Couldn't get a table, that's why. But you know, youth is a precious thing. Live it, enjoy it, have it while you've got it, because it won't last. But the spirit of the poem, well, a piece of verse really, it's hardly a poem, but the spirit of David was such that in using it and enjoying it and dedicating it to God who gave it, then in fact you really never grow old. You know, Brother Richard Bandon wasn't an old man. He's just died. Some of you know him. Knew him well. He was an active campaigner, you know, with young people. And he wasn't an old man. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and all that is within me, bless his holy name. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and forget not all his benefits, who forgiveth all thine iniquities, who healeth all thy diseases, who redeemeth thy life from destruction, who crowneth thee with loving kindness and tender mercies, who satisfiest thy mouth. No, it says thy prime in my margin, thy years, with good things, so that thy youth is renewed like the eagles. You know, David knew the secret of eternal youth. This young man who could take a lion and tear him to protect his flock, who was an expert with the sling. And a lot of practice went into that shot, you know, that brought Goliath down. It wasn't just a lucky strike, although God guided the stone, no doubt. Who could gather men around him and take the robbers and the thieves and all the people who were in trouble and the cave of Adullam and weld them into a great and powerful force because they followed him. The last picture you have of him is of a shivering old man, isn't it? Just, you pile the bedclothes on him and he couldn't get warm. And it's then that he spoke of all his desire, all his salvation, all the things that were yet to be, and all the things which God had promised him, the covenants that we've been talking of all the weekend, which were ordered in all things and sure. And that's how one's prime is satisfied, when the legs get a bit stiff and the Jacobs begin to halt. And that's how one's youth is renewed like the eagles, because you look forward to the time when even the young men shall be weary and the youth shall faint, but they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength like the eagles. Well, Jacob would have understood this, wouldn't he? Let's turn back to 48th chapter of Genesis. Because here we find him in what should be the most tragic moment of his life. He's saying goodbye. He's gathered Joseph and his sons around him. And shortly is to gather all his sons. He'd already blessed Joseph separately in acknowledging when Joseph came. And it says, a little difficult verse in the chapter before, he bowed himself upon the bed's head. In Hebrews, Paul says that in faith he worshipped upon the top of his staff. And I think that means that Joseph came to him with his staff of office. See, Joseph was king in Egypt, wasn't he? Almost, anyway. He was the feeder of the land of Egypt. And when Jacob sees him come, he sees in his son the promise of the king that is to be, and in the symbol of his staff and his authority. So that old man as he was, full of dignity, and he doesn't lose a shred of that dignity, he acknowledges the superiority of his son in worshipping upon the top of his staff. Because it isn't his son's superiority at all. It's what God has done in both of them and will do that he recognizes. Well, now here he is in this situation. You know, if he looked back over his life in one way, then he would have to confess as he did to Pharaoh when he met him first. Few and evil have been the days of the years of my pilgrimage. 130 years, you know, seems a long time. But like a weaver's shuttle, they're gone when you look back. Calvin's looked back on 25 years and they're gone like that. So that nothing's changed really, it's still the same Swanee, but 25 years. Put something on a man, doesn't it? Yes. It's only a few of grey hairs here and there upon him, and like Ephraim, you know, if it not. But anyway, 130 years, few and evil. Well, he could have picked out the rough times. Back home in the tent. And the murderous hatred of Ephraim and the terror and the panic. He could have looked back on a lifetime of tension in the family home, followed by tension in his own home. He could have named his sons one by one. He does later on. And he could have dwelt upon all the bad points, the rough times. 130 years, you know. But he doesn't. Not in this chapter. He blessed, 15, verse 15, he blessed Joseph and said, God, the God, it is, before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac did walk, the God which fed me all my life long unto this day, the angel which redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads, and let my name be named on them, and the name of my fathers Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. And that word fed, you know, is quite a common word in the Old Testament. It's the same word as shepherd. It's the same word as rule, incidentally. You know, the Hebrew word for rule and feed are the same. Because only one who takes the responsibility of feeding and sustaining his family has divine authority to rule it. And in fact, the Lord Jesus Christ is the supreme example of this, because when they saw that he could multiply loaves and feed 5,000 men, they wanted to take him by force and make him a king. And it was all a fulfillment, it seemed, of what Messiah should do when he came. And make no mistake about it, there is no authority given to anybody, not even wardens for that matter, unless they prepare to take a responsibility as well. And Jacob knew this, because this was his life's craft. The sheep at noonday, we heard about it, in the frost at night. And the good shepherd giveth his life for the sheep. And the God which had shepherded him all the days of his life until that time, and was still with him, in life, in death, O Lord, abide with me. This was Abraham's God and Isaac's, and he was the God of Jacob. Now, you know, if I can talk with reverence, and you've got to use the words that there are, God himself imposes this responsibility on himself. The fact that God creates has given him a responsibility, so to speak, because all that he creates, and this is in one of our wonderful hymns, in the praise to the Lord, the Almighty, the King of creation, and that which he has created, he so gently sustaineth. He giveth food to all living things, says the psalmist. In fact, the earth was formed like that, so that the food for every living thing was there before the living thing was created that was going to partake of it. And man is no exception, the crown of his creation. In fact, there's a beautiful thought in the very word that is used in the second verse of the Bible, where the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters and God said, let there be light, and there was light. That word moved, you know. It means hovered over, like a bird. Like Jesus said when he said to Jerusalem, how often would I have gathered thy children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, and you would not. And so God brings the earth to life by this kind of loving care, this love in creation that we sing of. By hovering over it, as it were. In a way that Moses said he did over Israel, like as an eagle stirreth over her nest, stirreth up her nest and fluttereth with her wings. I have brought you on eagle's wings out of Egypt and brought you unto myself. And so we've sung, haven't we, of the covering wings, O God of Bethel, by whose hand thy people still are fed, who through this weary wilderness hast all thy people led, and spread thy covering wings around, so that we stay in God's house. And so the fact that he is God and the world is his world means that he loves it and sustains it and feeds it and loved it so much that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish but should have everlasting life, that life which he creates right at the beginning. And so when Jacob says, the God which fed me, which shepherded me, he isn't using the same words, but the idea is there, that wherever he went, in rough places and in smooth, and through the valley of the shadow of death, God was with him. Therefore shall I lack nothing. Have you ever seen animals being moved along the road? Crowd of sheep, for example. They're usually driven in this country, but as you know, the shepherds led them. There's a wonderful picture, incidentally, in the Weekend Telegraph of a shepherd community. There are lots of things which are not to be commended for, but there's still a wonderful picture of the sheep going up over a very rocky path across the Persian, the land of Persia, actually. You know, I've often wondered what the sheep thought, if they thought at all. Perhaps it's just as well that they didn't. But you know, they want to go there, and they're forced back in this way, and the way is rough. When they're not thinking, they fall over the edge. And I'm quite sure that if a sheep chose, then it would stay where it was until it had eaten the grass all the way around it and then wonder where the rest was coming from. But they're forced on, they're led on, in the case of the Palestinian shepherd, coax on, my sheep hear my voice. Everyone known by name, just like God knows the stars by name. But you see, the shepherd's care, whatever, even though the sheep may think this is a pretty rough path that we're going through, why have we got to get up and move on? The fact remains that overriding it all is the care of the shepherd. And while they remain in that care, even though they fall over the precipice, they are sought for, you know, leave the 99 and look for that one. And Jacob was like that. You know, if you think, if you were to look forward to here through his experiences, if you were to look forward to some of the ones that you've already had, you wouldn't want them, would you? And as we sang this morning, we don't want to know the full tale anyway, because we couldn't bear it. But looking back, Jacob wasn't like that. because there wasn't a thing which had happened to him which had not confirmed him in the fact that he was part of God's purpose. And that whatever had happened, from that he could not be separated. Few and evil of the days of the years of my pilgrimage been, but God shepherded me all my life long until this day. There's a very beautiful theme, incidentally, that runs through Scripture. I may have talked about this here before, but that could have been so many years ago that it's a new generation anyway. There's a beautiful theme that goes through Scripture with this. It isn't quite the same idea, although yet it is. Where the psalmist speaks of under the shadow of thy wings. Where he's a part of a purpose, and so long as he doesn't move outside the shadow of God's wings, then it doesn't matter. Just as the pillar of cloud by day and the fire by night was a shadow over the tent. And while people dwelt in the tabernacle or dwelt in the camp, then they were going through a great and terrible wilderness. But it didn't matter, because God was their shepherd. In fact, in one of the Psalms calls him the shepherd of Israel that leadeth like a flock. Under the shadow of thy wings will I make thy refuge, said David, until these calamities be overpassed. And when Ruth leaves her native land, and all her life is in ruins apparently, her husband's dead, her sister's husband's dead, her mother, her father-in-law is dead, there's nobody left but Naomi. And she goes and says, thy God shall be my God. And Boaz says to her that you have come to seek the God of Israel, under whose wings thou art come to trust. And so the God who took his people by eagle's wings, and if only he had let them, he would have made their youth renewed like the eagles, led them through the great and terrible wilderness. And you know, they were hungry there. And thirsty. Strange, isn't it? That God that shepherded them, which fed them, all the way through, let them go hungry. And there's a reason. Let's have a look for a moment at Deuteronomy chapter 8. We looked at this in a different context last night, but let's just look at it again. You know, every time you look at it, you see something else. Thou shalt remember, chapter 8, verse 2, all the way by which the Lord thy God hath shepherded thee these 40 years in the wilderness, to humble thee. This touches us, doesn't it? We were reminded of this morning. Not that God wishes to destroy people. Do you remember how Martin worked this out for us in the thoughts of the evening last night? Not that God wants to destroy, or that he wants to keep man in his place. It isn't that kind of humbling. But it is the cleansing of the heart to make it contrite, because God says, I will dwell with him also that is of a humble and a contrite heart. And so he does this in the wilderness. He dwells with his people and humbles them and proves them to know what was in their heart, whether thou wouldest keep his commandments or no. And he humbled thee and suffered thee to hunger. Now how can God feed you all the days of your life if he suffers you to hunger? Why does it happen to me? You know, people say this. If there's a God, why do I suffer like this? Or if there's a God, why does he allow this to go and this and that to go? Well, it's a difficult question there, particularly when it touches us personally. It's all very well to talk about the problem of suffering, you know, and all very well to view it in a detached way, and when it happens to somebody else, say, well, this is, you know, it's all in God's purpose, you know. But to be able to say that, when it touches you, when it touches me most closely, when it's my life that seems to be in ruin, or when the ideals of your youth have gone like that, or when the plans you made are frustrated, or when, well, we won't say when, because nobody knows what's when, do we? But you see, when God suffered them to hunger, he fed them with manna at the same time. Because the fact that Israel were hungry was their misconception of what was going on. They weren't hungry at all. They had manna. They had enough for their daily needs. No more. It was there in the morning. And if they didn't get it in the morning, well, they didn't have it. And if they tried to stockpile, it didn't do them any good. And if they looked for it on the Sabbath day, which was a day in which they dedicated their leisure to God, well, it wasn't there. When they sought it after the commandment, then they had enough even for the Sabbath day, and they couldn't do anything about it. And they give the game away on another occasion when they said, we have nothing to eat in our soul. We have no bread, I think the words are. We have no bread and our soul loatheth this light bread. Well, you can't have it both ways, can you? You can't say, we don't like this bread and then say, we haven't gotten it. So we have to understand, as Israel were forced to understand, that when God says, I am with you, and that's the next address, and I won't trespass on it, then he means what he says. And although we seem to be suffered to hunger, God feeds with manna, which we knew not, that he might make thee know that man doth not live by bread only, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of the Lord doth man live. And you remember how the Son of God himself, who after 40 days and did eat nothing, could have said with justification, I am hungry, learned that lesson. And he just had to hold on that little bit longer. And the angels came and ministered unto him. And even the Son of God suffered this experience. Now if you think about it, it's a wonderful thought then, isn't it? It gives an added meaning to that psalm. You know, the 23rd psalm, everybody knows that. Any hymn singing session, if you ask, you know, which one you want next? Oh, Crimmon, we'll have hymn number 37, The Lord is My Shepherd. Some people like the tune. Some people like the words, but it always gets sung, and if we haven't got time, we just have the first and last verse. But you look at the 23rd Psalm, not as a popular hymn or a well-known thing, but look at it with this in mind. Think of Jacob, lying in his bed, ready to draw his feet up, and apparently in the valley of the shadow of death. Think of David, who could have looked back and lamented his lost youth. Think of anyone you know. My father. He isn't an old man, if you know him. He's 78, but he isn't an old man. Because he would say just exactly the same thing. The God which shepherded me all the days of all my life long. And you can think of other examples. And so, God will be with us. The God who has fed us all our life long, long or short, until now. And to him that overcometh will I give to enter in and to eat of the tree of life, which is in the midst of the garden of God. We've gone back to the garden of God several times this weekend. Well, now we go to the other end. and I will give him to eat of the hidden manna. And so, young people, it's difficult to grasp all this when you are going through it, you know? But this is what faith is. This is what the children of Israel lacked in the wilderness. This is what Abraham had when he waited till he was over 100 for any sign that God was going to move in the matter of the promise. Or Jacob. Or Isaac. But they all acted as though they had in their hands the things that they hoped for, and believed that the Lord being their shepherd, they could walk through the valley of the shadow of death and fear no evil, for God was with them, and his rod and his staff comforted them, the staff which pulled them out. And surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord at Bethel with the covering wings